We often focus on their long and wild journey. There, these wild ones are, plodding through the desert on camels, following the star by night, and hoping they were still moving in the right direction by day. Or maybe we turn our gaze to the intense and maybe a little bit ridiculous gifts that they bring for the baby. They are meant to be symbolic, I know, and still I find it just a little bit silly to bring incense for a baby, even very, very expensive incense. The gifts, this way of showing honor and paying homage, they matter. And my hunch is that most of us have already thought a whole lot about gifts these last couple of weeks. Maybe that's not what we most need today. There's another key part of the story tucked in right at the very end, though, which would be easy enough to miss. There, after the Magi have basked in the glow of the Christ child, after they've been overwhelmed by joy and paid him homage, after all is said and done, they take a different road home. In some ways, it feels like a quiet, kind of anticlimactic end. It certainly would not make for a very exciting movie. But I think it is every bit as important as any other part of the story. Evil is alive and well. It was then, and it is now. Upon hearing the Magi's account of the star and what it might mean, King Herod, the ruler of all of Judea, begins to quake with fear. He frets over the rumors of this new king who could, he imagines, rise up and overthrow him. Remember, everyone has been expecting a mighty warrior of a Messiah. And so the Magi's celestial observations sound like terrible news to Herod. He feels so threatened that he wants to snuff out this potential competition before this competition is even speaking in sentences. And he tries. First, he tries to coax the Magi to come back and give him a report on what and who they found and where and when, feigning a desire to go and pay respect himself. It seems like they will probably comply, but then the story takes another turn. In a dream, the wise ones hear a warning of what is to come, and they go home by another road. And that makes all the difference. Herod still goes after Jesus, but with a wanton spread of destruction rather than precision, ordering that all Hebrew boys under 2 be killed. But Jesus and his parents have already escaped. The Magi have bought them just enough time to flee to safety in Egypt. It is a small act, turning left instead of right, choosing to follow their gut and the dream rather than cave to this mighty power. Sometimes living gospel love is not grand or showy. Sometimes it is exactly this subtle. It is the choice to quietly walk one way instead of the other. Next Sunday, we will be baptizing a beautiful and very small baby and also a fabulous 8-year-old into the body of Christ. It is a gorgeous occasion, one that is a cause for great celebration. And at the same time, I think it's important to name that some of the hope that exists in baptism comes in how we acknowledge that evil still exists as a force in the world and then promise to resist it together. I've been thinking about all the different ways we get to do this, get to be part of thwarting evil. Sometimes we're called to big and bold action, linking arms in the face of injustice or taking a stand to dismantle oppression. Sometimes this work is necessarily on display and then inspires others to their own boldness. And sometimes it's quieter and more difficult to see from the outside, but no less important in moving us all in the direction of love. Take, for example, Denmark in April 1940. This fall, my son Sam and I read Number the Stars by Lois Lowry. I had read it as a child, but I was overwhelmed to rediscover, or maybe discover for the first time in some places, the layers of the story as I came into it as an adult. As Hitler advanced, the Danes knew that as a small country with an even smaller army, they did not stand a chance. Rather than resist in the way that we typically think of resistance, knowing that it would mean the certain slaughter of his people, the king capitulated just 2 hours after Hitler invaded. Or so it appeared. As Nazi troops thundered into the country, though, already the resistance was brewing, largely underground. People brought ingenuity and great care to the effort, each taking what skills they already had in regular life and then reworking them in order to help their Jewish neighbors to safety. Writers lent their words to the goal of crafting cryptic messages, keeping one another informed while protecting the details of this secret work. Fishermen who lived on the coast, they built false bottoms into their ships, into their not ships, their little fishing boats, so that they could hide people and safely ferry them across the sea to Sweden. Chemists discovered, I love this so much, they discovered a way to soak handkerchiefs in an invisible mixture of rabbit's blood and cocaine. It's useful to tremendous results. The rabbit's blood attracted the dogs that the Nazis were using to sniff out stowaways. And then the cocaine on the hankies temporarily zapped the dogs' ability to smell. Again, keeping these hidden neighbors safe. And there were yet more ways of resisting. A few years into the occupation, the king ordered that the Danish Navy sink their fleet, their own boats, rather than let the Nazis take over and make use of them. Back in the cities, folks watered plants and kept up their neighbors' apartments. A simple but beautiful insistence that it was not just the safety of their neighbors that mattered, but also their dignity and their comfort. It was quiet. It was mostly underground. It was often just one person or a couple of people at a time deciding in their hearts and their minds that they would not participate in this evil. But ultimately, it turned out to be a whole nation deciding that they would choose to search out the light of what stars they could find and follow them, all finding their way home by this new road. In the end, because of these efforts, more than 95% of Jews in Denmark survived the war, going on then to share their own light in countless ways. God only knows what this new year will hold for us. My hunch is that, as ever, it will contain breathtaking beauty and staggering joy and also fear and heartbreak, all of which will demand our faithful response. Good is at work in the world, and so too is evil. But since the beginning of time, and since the Magi trekked, and on through the struggles of our own recent history and present day, the resistance has always been there. I pray that when it is our turn, we will step forward also, whether with grand acts or more subtle ones. Sometimes we can start just by going home on another road.